Working with someone that you know is innocent and who has a sentence, it's difficult work emotionally.
I'm Mary Evans. In this season of Reentry Stories, we explore injustices within the criminal justice system and hear from exonerees who are reclaiming their lives. Support for Reentry Stories comes from the Montgomery County Office of Reentry and the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO. The Ohio Innocence Project, or OIP, is a nonprofit dedicated to helping wrongfully convicted individuals in Ohio. Founded in 2003 and based at the University of Cincinnati College of Law, the OIP works to identify and exonerate those who have been convicted of crimes they did not commit. Tara Rosnall is the chair of OIP's Board of Advocates.
Hi, sure, Mary. My name is Tara Rosnall. I am an attorney, and for purposes of this interview, I am a board member of the Ohio Innocence Project and do some pro bono legal work for them in terms of investigating cases and helping to prepare them for litigation.
And what got you started on that mission?
Well, in 2018, I retired from my job at Procter & Gamble, where I worked for 28 years as a corporate attorney. And I was just kind of looking at work that I could do in retirement, but you know, not a full-time job. I was interested in volunteer work. And at that time, the dean of the law school was Verna Williams, and she came to P&G to meet with a group of UC law alums who were working at P&G and just to talk to us about the things that were going on at UC Law School. And so one of the things that she talked about was the Ohio Innocence Project. And as soon as I heard about the work they were doing, I knew that that was something I was very interested in. Just the fairness of our criminal legal system is always something that has interested me. So I made arrangements to attend an event that OIP was putting on at the Mercantile Library. It actually was a journalist who had worked to kind of expose the story that happened with the East Cleveland Three, which are some of the three of our OIP exonerees. And then from that time on, I met Mark Godsey, who's the director of OIP, and was eventually asked to join the board, which I did in 2018 and have been involved ever since.
Well, I appreciate like all the work that you're doing. And so thank you so much for, you know, retiring and still fighting the good fight. Has there been many challenges, which I know there probably has been, but if you could just give the listeners maybe some examples of like some of the challenges that you may face when doing some of this work to exonerate individuals.
Sure. So one challenge, I guess I'll say, is financial. Just because OIP is a small nonprofit, they are a part of UC Law School, but they are, and they do have a, they were started by a donation, a very large donation from Dick Rosenthal. And so that is part of the funding, but the rest of the funding is just raised through private funds. And that's one of the board of directors, you know, kind of our chief mission. And, you know, just like with all costs, the costs of investigating these cases has gone up over time. I think when OIP was first started back in 2003, a lot of the cases were kind of low-hanging fruit, I guess I would call it. Maybe there was clear DNA evidence that existed and that if tested would point to the correct person who committed the crime. But now, after 20 years of working, fewer of our cases are DNA cases, and more of them involve extensive investigation. And so we hire investigators for that work. And also just travel costs of, you know, the students driving around to the different prisons and meeting with our clients, et cetera. So costs have just gone up. That's one thing. And then the second thing I guess I would say possibly even just more important in terms of challenges, just it's difficult work emotionally. So there are times when we think that it is clear that a particular client has not committed a crime, but we're not able to find new evidence, or we're not able to find what we need, especially in cases where they may have taken a plea bargain. In those cases, the bar is extremely high. And so working with someone that you know is innocent and who has a very long sentence, but not being able to do anything in certain cases, that's very tough. And that's one of the roles of the board of directors, is I think to kind of be a sounding board and be emotional support for the staff attorneys who work for many years. And our average case can take about 7 years, and there are a lot of setbacks during those times, even in cases where we are ultimately successful in getting that person exonerated. There are many setbacks along the way, and it's very difficult when a person and their family is affected by that.
I guess another question I have for you. So, for me, I was ultimately, guilty of the crimes that I did. However, I do feel like the sentence was a mandatory minimum. I was like maxed out compared to some of the other individuals in my committing county and what they might have been sentenced to. That's neither here nor there. And I'd always heard that when you took a plea, there was no option for appeal or anything like that. It was kind of like set in stone. So I think it's monumental that you're able to help individuals kind of like have a voice when they've taken an appeal in a court system. But my question is, and this seems to be like a growing theme, I was unaware of the exoneration process. I thought once the team, the team that's there to defend you and to present this evidence or take you through a new trial. I thought once you went through that, it was done, over with, you're free to go. But I guess there's still some more steps after that. If you could explain, like, why does it take so many more steps after the evidence and everyone has said, okay, this individual obviously was not guilty. Why does that happen?
Yeah, so I can explain a little bit of that, and there are probably people who are more expert in this who could explain it in greater detail. But what I can say is this: that the first step in an exoneration, when you believe that a client is innocent, is that there has to be new evidence. So it has to be something beyond what was presented at trial, and even what was available at trial. So that's the first challenge, is to find that new evidence. It can be difficult. Oftentimes we're working many years after the crime has occurred. So to the extent that that new evidence may involve witnesses, or just finding evidence that was collected in order to DNA test it, that sort of thing, it can be difficult just because of the passage of time. Then, if we prevail, what we prevail in is in overturning the original verdict. So you have then successfully overturned that verdict, and then the state can retry that person. But they have to, then that new evidence comes into play. So if you have found a new witness, or you have DNA evidence now, or you have found evidence of official misconduct, like maybe something was hidden and not turned over, and the investigation is constitutionally required, then that new evidence would become part of the new case. They don't always retry the person, but sometimes they do. And so then it's a matter of going through another trial, which is very difficult for our clients to have to endure because they have such mistrust of the judicial system at that point in time because of their past experiences. So that's the next step. And then if they are cleared, then there's a separate step for actually declaring innocence and being able to get compensation. So compensation then is kind of the last phase to try to be compensated for that time while they were in prison.
And the compensation piece is, to me, mind-blowing because for me, if I was wrongfully convicted, I don't think that there's a price on a day for each day that I did spend away from my family, away from, reality, away from success and growth that could have potentially, took my life in a whole different direction. So I don't know how do, I mean, maybe you can answer this. How do they come up with a specific number? I've heard, some people you might have, $2.3 million compensation, but then you have some people that have, 50 some million dollar compensation. So is it based off the length or is it based off of the crime or, how do they determine what they're asking for?
Well, first of all, I should mention that OIP actually does not handle the compensation part of the, what we or we our mission is just to free innocent people from prison. So once they get beyond that initial where they're free and they have their verdict has been overturned, then we support the other lawyers who are kind of picking up the case going forward, but OIP is not involved with the cases at that time. But to answer your question, there's kind of two ways that people are compensated. One is based on the amount of time that they served, and there's kind of a formula that they put together in terms of what that person's earning potential would have been, et cetera. And then there's a separate process for if there was official misconduct in the case, and that's kind of a whole different process and different formula. So it can be very different, but what you said at the outset is very true. I mean, in fact, there is no way to compensate somebody for the loss that they have endured, and that is one thing that you'll really hear our exonerees talking about is there's no way to replace those years of their lives when they would have been getting started in their careers, when they would have been, getting married or having children or raising their children if they already have children. And so, it's a way to maybe help the person to have a start and be able to afford, some housing or things like that in the beginning, but it in no way actually compensates them for the harm that they have endured.
Hi, I'm Nina Ellis. The Ohio Country Podcast is ready for you to hear in its entirety, all 12 episodes. No doubt you're going to learn something about Ohio's indigenous tribes that you didn't learn in school. Find it at wiso.org or wherever you find your podcasts.
The Ohio Country is funded by Ohio Humanities.
Yeah, and another growing theme that I've realized that happens with these exonerees also is that, they might be, returned to society and been home 10, 12 years and still waiting to be compensated. And I just think that that's an injustice as well. I mean, 10 years out of the judicial system and you've got your conviction overturned and all these things. And so, I mean, I don't know if maybe. I mean, you just educated me a lot on the process, and I think that it's very modest and admirable that you guys kind of are like, hey, we'll get you home. We support the financial piece of it, but we're not, because that's when things could probably get kind of sticky and tricky. Because, with those kinds of representation, I know that there's probably a fee and all those things. So I don't know if maybe, exonerees are just like, I don't want to fight this fight anymore. Most of the exonerees that I've spoken to, not just on this season of Reentry Stories, but having access to them and meeting them through Mr. Dean Gillespie, some of them are just like, I know that I'm probably never going to see this money, but I'm still holding on to hope that one day they'll do the right thing. And so, you know, that's why I just wanted to ask, like, why do some people get awarded? Why are there so many different, you know, amounts and things? So thank you for clarifying that. And I have
No,
another
there's.
question. Oh, go
Oh, I
ahead,
was going
please.
to just say one more thing on that because it's an emerging thing that we're seeing, and it's really a difficult thing for some of our clients. So sometimes there's something that happens after the verdict is overturned, and when the state is going to retry that person, but the new evidence will come into the trial. Sometimes the state at that point offers what we call a dark plea, which means that the state will agree not to retry them if they agree to take a plea, basically to some lesser charge than they were charged with, but it's still going to be a significant felony and time served. And sometimes some of our clients have agreed to those kind of pleas because they are so fearful and have such distrust in the system. They don't want to go through another trial, which could take years. It involves more uncertainty because they don't know for sure what the outcome will be. And if that happens, if they do take a plea at that stage, then they are not eligible for any compensation.
Oh, wow. So even if there's new evidence put into play and it's, you know, substantial enough that we know that if we did go to trial, but I understand kind of like the angle that Ohio Innocence Project takes because of me being a system impacted person, you guys just genuinely want the best for the exoneree. And so if they are fearful, you're not going to say, you're not going to push them to do something that they don't want to do. And I think that that speaks volumes because it's like they have the ultimate voice. It's them actually driving the car to their own freedom. I just think that it's a disservice and injustice that they would still have something on their record when this evidence could come into play. But I totally understand. I like see both sides of it because it's like, well, why would I want to put myself in harm's way and something go wrong, or you know, this evidence not count, or the jury say, you know what, you know, I don't care, guilty. Like I totally get that. So that's kind of hard, you know. I think I guarantee you, to go back to what you said previously, the emotion and dealing with the connection that you have with the people that you're representing, I'm sure that that's probably really hard to see people actually have to take a dark plea. So I couldn't
Yes.
imagine what that would even feel or look like, you know. So yeah, that's really, really rough. And then I guess my final question before moving on to just like wrapping it up is so what happens? So let's say, for instance, you have an individual. We'll use myself as example. I'm an exoneree. This whole process has happened. Maybe I took a dark plea or I did not. But where is the justice for the victims? You know, the victim or the victim's family? Because now you've proved that I wasn't the one who did this. Does the state then go and try to find who does it, or does it just kind of like, okay, we got it wrong, this wasn't the person, and they never go back to try to find the person who actually did it? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's true, not in every case, because we actually do have some cases in which no crime actually occurred, some sort of accident or something like that, and not an actual crime in the end. But most of the time, you're correct, there is a victim, and that victim has been impacted, and their family has been impacted. And when the wrong person is convicted, that is not justice for that. For that victim and for their family, in addition to obviously not being justice for that wrongfully convicted person. So, one thing I'll say just as an aside is that is one thing I love about the mission of OIP is that in addition to trying to get people out of prison, OIP does a lot of work in trying to prevent wrongful convictions, and for this being one major reason. And so they work a lot on, well, there's a book written by Mark Godsey called Blind Injustice, which goes through kind of eight causes for wrongful conviction. We do a lot of education with Ohio universities. Pierce Reed does this work. We call it OIPU. And so they have chapters set up at universities all over Ohio, and they teach about this, and then the students put on at the end they put on a presentation for people in the community to understand how wrongful convictions can happen and how they can be avoided. So, for example, recently OIP was successful in having all custodial interrogations recorded. That protects the police, and it also protects the person who's being interrogated to make sure that, the conditions are fair and not oppressive under which that interrogation is happening. So that's an aside. But back to your question, sometimes actually OIP is successful in figuring out who the person who really did it is. That has happened especially in cases with DNA testing that, it comes back to the person who is actually responsible for the crime. And in that case, the state can then go and pursue the pursue the evidence against that person. Other times that does not happen, and then it just depends. I mean, the state, may they do have they do try to s continually solve cold cases, but the longer you are, I mean, these cases take so long to get through the system that oftentimes, the evidence just may not exist anymore. You may not be able to find the witnesses or to find the evidence, or evidence has been lost or destroyed through the course of those years, and then they're not able to do that.
And then I guess my final thing to kind of engage with you in is, say for instance you have some attorneys who may be listening right now, and they're retired and they want to do what's right. They want to have they want to help other people kind of navigate through the judicial system and work on these things. What kind of advice would you give them?
Well, if for people who may be interested in OIP in particular, there are things that people can do to help. I mean, engaging with us on social media. It's the Ohio Innocence Project on Facebook and X and Instagram. You can attend our events, which take place throughout the state and throughout the year, to learn more about it. If there is a OIPU presentation in your area, attending those sorts of things to learn about it, attending or giving money to our annual fundraiser, of course, is always appreciated. So those are some of the ways to help OIP. Or if you're involved in your business or a school or a religious organization, you can ask an exoneree to come and share their stories with your group and help raise money through listening to those stories. But there are also other great organizations in Ohio. The Ohio Justice and Policy Center comes to mind. You can help people get expungements or things like that. So there's a lot of great ways to be involved, and through the Ohio Bar Association also, you can find out what some of those are.
Well, I thank you so much for your time and explaining these processes. And I hope that people are listening. You can go to the Ohio Innocence Project .org. It's located in the University of Cincinnati's Law Department. Mark Godsey is the director, an amazing individual. I've got to speak to so many exonerees throughout this journey. And thank you, Tara, for explaining your role and why this stuff is important. And I'm just hoping that more people can get involved. And if you're interested in helping to, fund, there's ways to donate. You can always visit their website. And thank you so much.
And thank you, Mary, for your work and shining a light on this issue. It's really important and really appreciated.
That was Tara Rosnell of the Ohio Innocence Project. I'm Mary Evans. Support for Reentry Stories comes from the Montgomery County Office of Reentry and the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO.